because I feel like my microphone wants me to be like right up on its ass in order to hear
or its
me.
Front.
Or
its dick, front. Right up on its dick.
Mine's omnidirectional, so I mean I could theoretically have my face in its ass.
I think you want it to be.
I don't know. Maybe that direction would work better than the frontal direction that I currently actually do have used as a setting. I don't know. It's a weird thing with microphones because I've got a jet turbine for computer cooling, and so I'm always trying to play with like the perfect level of gain and sound filtering through post to try to make it sound as, you know, professional as possible.
Got to get those gains.
Yeah, which doesn't really fucking matter, I guess, because people so clearly will read the title of a podcast and go on like 2-page long diatribes about nothing. I mean, completely ignoring points you made during the podcast. Yeah, a lot of people aren't very, very happy with Brian's opinion that Geoff Johns was such a good choice for
the producer, one of the executive producers on the Green Lantern show.
Green Lantern show, yeah. And one guy, RJ, man, he just he goes off, and there's some points in there where I can tell like it doesn't sound like he listens to the podcast, because there's things that Brian like specifically addresses that this guy doesn't seem.
You hear that, RJ? You're a fucking poser. You're a poser, and you're a terrible person. You're the worst. And you can definitely call us out if you actually did listen to this. And yeah, in which case, if you did listen to the previous podcast so you can hear what he has to say. But you did have a lot to say in regards to the Geoff Johns situation.
Yes, a lot. And then he really gets into some of the comic books stuff about it. Really gets into like why some decisions that were made in some of the animation shows and movies, where like how dare Superman be able to take down a person with a lantern ring, and there's nobody stronger than a Green Lantern. There's like, I mean, dude obviously loves his Green Lantern.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. I'm curious who he'd want to bring into the situation, into the role, because I mean, yeah, who would you suggest? I get the impression that a lot of people who are really passionate about something, there's no one who's good enough. Mm. And I want to know who it is they want in this role.
Well, I saw some other people make some complaints about things that John's name has been attached to.
Like what?
Somebody, I think, make sure I'm getting this right. Maybe it was RJ himself. This guy makes some comments about his take on the whatever. Oh yeah, no. Auntie Fa said finally he pretty much fucked up the Green Lantern movie by saving Sinestro for a second film that never got made because the first one was so stupid. I didn't get a chance to look at what Johns did on that movie yet, but I was going to say
I think he was a writer.
Okay.
Let me double check. I might be full of shit. Oh, co-producer on the film. Co-producer.
That's it. Co-producer.
I will double check, but you keep talking as I double check.
What I was going to say is we also know that he had his name attached to some stuff from the DCEU, but we don't think he ever got past much more than like EP or a producer level or producer credit on.
I think he was intimately involved for like a year, but we never got to see.
Do you think?
Well, here's the thing. I think he was brought on immediately after Batman v Superman came out. But I also think that means he didn't have much input on Wonder Woman, means he'd have much input on Suicide Squad. And then he was kind of at the beginning part, or maybe during the production of Justice League. So basically when they were scrambling to fix it. And then he was basically let go, I think, after Justice League came out. So we never even got to see something that was fully his vision.
Yeah, and he was a co-producer. I'm on IMDb right now. He was just a co-producer. I say just a co-producer. That can mean
whatever in Hollywood. Yeah, but yeah, he wasn't a writer.
He was not a writer on the much... maligned or much hated Ryan Reynolds Green Lantern movie from 2011.
He wrote a lot of oh no he didn't wait character design character created by okay so no that's just the series he did write some Arrow episodes, which is interesting. Okay. I didn't know he wrote Arrow episodes.
Yeah. That's the point that I was getting at, and I'm guilty of it too. I am always one to say in Feige we trust, but you're always quick to remind me his name is attached to things that I don't like from Sony and Fox.
Was he attached to Daredevil? I want to say he was, but yeah, he was. That's the thing, and it's hard in Hollywood.
And it all depends on which level of involvement. Just because your name's on something doesn't really mean you had a lot of say so.
Yeah, exactly. It's difficult because. I mentioned this, I think, last episode I was on, where it's almost impossible to tell whether or not a writer is actually talented, because it all just depends on who's giving them notes, who's telling them how to shift and change their writing, right? And yeah, it's just, he was on Daredevil. Kevin Feige was on Daredevil. Spider-Man, Daredevil, X-Men, X2, Hulk. Yeah. Ew, gross, Hulk. The Punisher movie, 2004. Blade Trinity, Elektra, Man-Thing.
Now look at his resume.
Fantastic Four, X-Men The Last Stand, Spider-Man 3, Fantastic Four, Rise of the Silver Surfer. It took him a bunch of movies to finally get to Iron Man.
Right. And varying levels of influence and input, and learning the biz himself as well.
Yep.
Learning quite a bit. So
people don't give people an opportunity to learn. Like, they just have no mercy. It's like, oh,
you failed once.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you failed like 12 times before you made something I liked, but there's this one time you failed that I didn't like it, and for that you are forever ruined.
Right. They don't take into consideration that people can grow as artists, and it's a bit frustrating. But you know, at the end of the day, in Hollywood, the good thing about Hollywood, I will say, is it does seem like, unless you're a part of some big scandal, it kind of allows you to fail upward a lot of times, where if you know the right people, if you do the right things, even if you make something that isn't great, you can hop back in and just do more stuff, as long as maybe you're fun, you're easy to work with, or maybe you're making money or what have you. So like there are opportunities there for you, and opportunities for you to grow. And obviously that pays off with filmmakers like Kevin Feige.
Yeah. And opportunities to remember to say good morning, everybody. And welcome to LR Mornings Today with Kyle and
Jammer.
And yeah, I just, when I saw what most of what RJ had to say, and then a few of the other people, I hope you guys, I hope we are wrong and
that I hope
you
we're right.
Did listen to the podcast. And hopefully you listen to this one too, where you get to hear, oh my God, Kevin Feige was attached to all of those terrible projects.
Yeah,
you know, and now look at it. Nobody would dare speak ill of his name, except maybe
except for, you know, some edgelord who's just like, the MCU movies suck. They're the worst movies ever. They're all the same. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, and Batman v Superman was a groundbreaking.
Hey, I like that movie.
And in film, when you look at the director's cut, it's.
I like that movie. How dare you? That movie's amazing.
Is it a groundbreaking, definitive?
It's not groundbreaking.
Film of you know. Shit.
I think it could have been groundbreaking if he was allowed to finish his vision. Hashtag Snyder cut. Whatever the hell this hashtag is. We want the Snyder cut. I don't remember what the hashtag is, but
I think it's just release the Snyder cut.
Release the Snyder cut. That's it. But it's frustrating to me how I'm kind of bummed that Warner Brothers got cold feet over the whole Zack Snyder situation, just because I appreciated just how he went all in, and everyone's like, oh, you need to establish your superheroes before you undermine them. Meanwhile, these are the same people who say, we don't want to see Bruce Wayne's parents' deaths again. And these are the same people who are saying, we don't want to see this stuff.
Oh, Bruce Wayne. Yeah, got it. Never mind.
Yeah, and like, they're the same people who are saying, we don't want to say the same stuff over and over again. And meanwhile, they're also saying, oh, you can't undermine your superhero vision unless you've established it. It's like, okay, fucking pick. There's nothing out there that says you have to, if you're starting a universe, you have to start from square one. And I appreciated that aspect of Batman v Superman, that it was interesting. It was a different idea, different take. I don't think it fully executed it, but I think it had some really good ideas in it. And I like the fact that he had the balls to say, hey, let's just throw in a random 15-minute, I don't think it was 15 minutes, maybe it was 5 minutes, the nightmare sequence scene that has nothing to do with the rest of the movie, and pay it off in like two movies or three movies, however movies it would take to get to Justice League 2, and basically finally have it come full circle. That is ballsy as fuck. And it wasn't like this vague little, because people could point to Age of Ultron. Oh, Age of Ultron has that dream sequence. No, this wasn't like that. This was like purely confusing. Like with the Age of Ultron thing, you can kind of see like, oh yeah, I see this is hinting towards vague death. Whereas this was like a very specific thing they were hinting at, and they weren't paying it off in this movie. And I was like, wow, filmmaking as a medium is potentially evolving to be more serialized like TV. Now, I don't know if that's a good thing, but it's an interesting thing. That's what I got excited for, and now we don't have that. Now it's just not connecting at all because cold feet.
Yeah. Snyder had said something earlier this year, back in March, talking about the nightmare scene was layered and gonna pay off later. So
I fully expected that it would, but obviously it's not going to anymore. I appreciated it very much, and even though I didn't understand it, even though I didn't fully understand the time travel mechanics of what exactly was happening, and even though I still think that the Flash looked oddly like an off-brand Iron Man in that scene, I still thought it was interesting.
Well, I and Brian both agreed yesterday that probably the smartest thing DC and Warner Brothers did ever since Man of Steel, the smartest move they have ever made was letting Ezra Miller's Flash be on the CW show Flash.
Oh, I don't think that's the smartest decision ever.
No, because it completely opens up to where they don't have to build a single universe. They can at any time when it's time to do Justice League over again, which I'm sure it might have a different subtitle. Maybe it will, maybe it won't, but I doubt it's Justice League 2. Flash can run through the universe to collect heroes from different timelines. It keeps them from having to re-explain the new Batman If they what things that they do with the Green Lanterns, things that it gives them so much freedom.
I don't know. I feel like they have the freedom. They don't need to explain it in order for there to be freedom. I guess that's my argument.
Think about the average fan, all right? And you go for the follow-up to Justice League, and you want Batman back in it.
By average fan, do you mean hardcore fan or average mainstream moviegoer?
I would say average comic book movie fan.
Okay, so someone who's well-versed in the comics.
Somebody that would... I think most people would sit there and look, if they didn't have, if they had Gal Gadot's Wonder Woman standing next to Pattinson's Batman without any explanation, although the Pattinson Wonder Woman clearly stood next to Ben Affleck's Batman, who was older, and that there's no time travel, just all of a sudden here's a new Justice League movie, and we're keeping the Wonder Woman and Aquaman, but we're replacing possibly Superman and Batman with these other guys that are younger and whose movies may take place in a different time. No, people would be upset.
I mean, the thing is that I feel like this isn't necessarily... I don't know. I feel like the people who'd be confused by that aren't the people who are watching that CW crossover,
and
they wouldn't know. They wouldn't know, like, oh, that they would just say that makes no sense. So the answer is, oh, nothing matters because everything could be connected or not. Like, it's kind of like that scene. It's kind of like that in The Incredibles where it's like when everyone is special, nobody is. It's like, well, if everything is in the multiverse, then nothing matters.
I mean, you can say it like that, but having a scene at the beginning where Flash is running through, or even throughout the first act of the film, he's running through the Speed Force and crossing over timelines and universes to collect the heroes he needs.
I mean, if you explain it, yeah, sure.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's what that gives them the ability to do that, so you can put Pattinson's Batman next to Gadot's Wonder Woman, because without something that explains it, I think everybody from the casual fans that have no idea about comic book crossovers, the books or the crossover event, they just really liked BVS, and they were down to see Batfleck again. They don't follow news channels like us. They'd be very, very upset. They'd be confused. Why is there the same Wonder Woman but a different Batman? And then the comic book fans who like Marvel, who want to see things explained, would be upset if there was no explanation scene. And I think that was a smart move, and it gives them a lot of creative freedom. You say they could have the freedom to do it without an explanation. I'm saying the explanation was a smart move.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. I guess I'm one of those people. I don't care. No,
we all know you don't care. So long as you take the characters on a journey where they end up in the second half or in the second act of a trilogy, they end up in the exact same spot they were at the beginning of the second, at the end of the second part of the trilogy, as they were in the second. Beginning.
I think
of the,
you caught yourself up in a little loop there, trilogy. Buddy. You just caught yourself.
I did. I was trying to basically say that Last Jedi picks and drops the characters off in the exact same spot as we meet them, as it does with the end of the film. But they went on a very interesting journey. It didn't have anything to do with world building.
They all had really substantial arcs.
They didn't really grow. They showed more.
Yes, they
more,
did. More. Are you kidding me?
The majority of the growth happens off scene. Or,
okay, we're not going to have this conversation right now. We're having this conversation right now. I mean, the arc. Each of the main characters have arcs. We have Finn, who learns to fight for a cause. You have Rey, who learns the importance of sort of becoming her own person. You have Poe, who learns the importance of actually, you know, fighting to keep something as opposed to just fighting to just blow something up. There are lots of really great arcs in that movie. Those are changes really that happen on screen.
When we meet them first off, they are in the same exact world predicament. A small group on the run.
They're not quite. They're a small group on the run. Just because you're physically in the same place as you started does not mean that it undoes the emotional growth. It puts you in a different, like if you start off 1 month jobless and then you go through a whole bunch of education stuff and then you better yourself as a human being and you still don't have a job, that doesn't just mean you're in the same exact position as before. You still have all the skills that you've accrued over the past few months. That's a really shallow perspective, Kyle.
Ray never once accepts that it doesn't matter who she comes from until she utters a word at the end of the very last film. The whole last film is still about her looking for who she is. And Po didn't really learn too much about teamwork or anything because the beginning of the next movie, again, is him not...
I'm not going to have this conversation right now, Kyle. I'm not going to argue about Star Wars again, Kyle. This is not going to happen. I just don't care.
I'm just saying that you could, I think, and I don't care for Nine.
Nine blows. I hate Nine.
And I didn't hate Eight.
I loved Eight.
But I think you can literally, because of what Nine does, you can watch 4, 5, 6, 7, 9. You do not need the Last Jedi at all for Disney's Star Wars films. You can ignore it.
It does not make a good stopping
point to where you watch 7 and then 8, and because of how much 9.
I would actually prefer
or what 9 does.
I would actually prefer watching 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 and stopping there. I think that's cleaner.
There's no closure for anything.
That's fine.
There's no closure for Kylo Ren.
You're right. There isn't. But at the same time, it also still leaves things kind of open for a better interpretation.
Why do you hate stories?
No, I love stories. Are you kidding me?
You hate complete stories and closure and worlds and you're just like
you're a comic
shit all over
fan.
The character.
You're a comic book fan. How do you? What are you talking about? Stories never get closure in comic books. How are you saying that?
Every 5 issues is an arc that
is an arc, but like not like a close, not an actual full on like beginning to end story.
No. In the comic books, you sometimes it depends. There's some stories that go on for 12 issues, and then that entire story is fully wrapped up, and then Parker goes off or Stark goes off on their next adventure.
Mm-hmm.
I understand
your point when the arcs aren't necessarily complete. Like they've grown, but they haven't completed their full arc at the end. I get that.
That's what I'm saying. Is
but
not
I don't mind that as much as going I'd rather have. I'd rather nine. Have that than episode 9.
but just. Closure wise, going from 7 to 9, 8 doesn't really matter. And if you just stop at 8 because you liked it more, you don't get any.
I'd rather do that. No, I'd rather have no closure than to have episode 9. Like I'll repeat that till the day I die.
Are you going to watch it again when it comes out on Disney Plus?
I have no intentions of doing it, but I'm sure at some point I'll watch it again. But I don't really know when.
I wish J.J. Abrams would have been able to have his own sneaky film crew to record all the behind the scenes stuff, like the actual
account of what happens, as opposed to like the whitewashed Disney stuff.
Yes, the episode 1 documentary where you see McCallum and them like shocked at the footage that they just saw. Mm-hmm. And then George Lucas trying to explain, well, I can't really make any cuts here. 'Cause he even knows what he just what he made with episode one, and like the scene when they're looking at the kids who are going to play Anakin, and several of the other film workers when he picks Lloyd over some of the other actors. Once he leaves the room, they start talking. Well, you know, I thought this kid was better. Like, we'll never get anything like that from Disney. We're gonna have a sterilized, clean, pristine. Everybody was hunky dory and loved making all three of these films.
Yeah, everyone has nice things to say about each other constantly. Most of it is them just complimenting each other. Yeah, it reminds me of also the episode 3 documentary stuff, making of that, how it was him and it was basically about the conflict between I think it was the composer. Was it the composer? No, it was basically one guy who wanted to up the music and one guy who wanted to up the sound effects. And I remember, I think the guy who liked music, he's like, there's too much noise. There's too much junk or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it was stuff like that. Like those types of documentaries, we don't get that much anymore.
Mm-mm. No, no. And it's,
I want to see that for the entire thing. I want to see that for, yeah, like, you know, the entire,
I
want to see
for 7, 8, and 9. Like all of it. I want the lowdown nitty gritty. That's what like some people would do profound things with time travel. I'm going to go watch the making of episode 7, 8, 9. Well, I can't really change anything, but if I don't change anything and I basically just go back and be an anonymous, you know,
a fly on the wall
person on set, yeah, you know, then nothing changes. Then I get to see the truth, you know.
Yeah,
that's what I would do. I would go secretly film
you,
the truth.
You would side with Rian Johnson,
and I would make the world's most gorilla gonzo journo.
You just said you can't expo. Change history.
No, I can't, but I can remember, I can film things that went there and then I can come back.
Oh, come back and then release it. Okay.
Release. Yeah.
Okay. I like that idea. Yeah. I'd watch that movie.
I wouldn't go kill Hitler. I would go make a Star Wars documentary.
Well, you can't change it, so that makes sense.
Yeah, but I mean, it would make that world better for no Hitler, right? You know, like future Trunks, even once he realizes he can't help out his own timeline, he still helps out the timeline he goes to.
So you're basically, you're a useless time traveler.
I am. I'm only good for my original timeline.
That's okay. That's no problem.
Well, what a journey today.
right. And we didn't even have a chance to talk about the things that I was thinking about talking about. We had to talk about Star Wars. For fucking,
was there anything really good that you wanted to talk about? That you really fired up about?
I don't know. Fired up. Trolls World Tour made more revenue than the original Trolls.
I saw that. Crazy.
Yeah.
More on video on demand. Kind of makes you really wish Disney and Marvel had the balls to experiment with Black Widow, like we said they should have this summer.
And I mean, like, it's interesting because the numbers are ultimately smaller. Like, all in all, I think it made about $100 million total. But as far as revenue goes, so based on $100 million total, so to keep in mind, it had $100 million total, and the other one made $346.9 million. It made, Trolls World Tour made $77 million in revenue, and that is apparently the equivalent or maybe more than what Trolls, the original one, did. So it has made a fraction of the amount of money, but it made like basically the equivalent amount of revenue.
Because of the like theater shares and stuff like that.
Yeah. It doesn't take into account the budget, as far as I know, nor does it take into account the the marketing stuff or the other things. But like, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. Or maybe it does. It's hard to tell. It's not clear.
It warrants at least like what we were saying. Let's see a big tentpole movie get pushed to video on demand.
Yeah, you
know,
agree.
Or like you and I had said, you know, fuck Disney. You own your own fucking streaming service. I know there's a coder somewhere that can put Black Widow behind a paywall.
Yeah.
You know, on Disney Plus, and yeah. You if you're already a subscriber, you
don't have to. They don't have to give anyone a cut.
Yeah, exactly. You could have seen what subscribers are willing to pay extra for, and could you grow subscribers by releasing that film there? Hey, if you sign up for 3 months, you pay for 3 months, you get Black Widow free.
Yeah, lots of good ideas there.
There's a lot of things they really could have experimented with, and this isn't like, you know, we're not talking $800 billion movies like we potentially were with Black Widow. I think it had the chance to do pretty damn well. I'd probably say more 6 to 8, but I'm always off on the box office shit. I thought Captain Marvel would barely touch 8 worldwide, and it broke a billion. So
yeah.
But I'm with you. We should experiment more.
Come on, Disney, do your thing.
Experiment more.
I like how I'm just pointing out Disney, not even like Warner Brothers. Warner Brothers, do your thing. They seem painfully committed to theaters.
Yeah. To which might end up being a detriment, depending on how much of the country is open again. I don't know how well Wonder Woman did in China, the first one, but I know it obviously did really well here in America. And so depending on how much of America's reopened, because I know a lot of stuff in China has reopened, allegedly.
Mm-hmm.
can never tell the truth with that fucking country government. Government, not people. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
Experiment more, Hollywood.
Do it.
Or in Jammer's mind, Disney.
Yeah, or everyone. All the studios. Yeah. All of the studios.
Well, if it doesn't, like, I already know the
the answer is 7.
I already know that your answer is I'm sorry, I got,
you lost the thread.
Yeah, where was I? There we go. With Wonder Woman, if not enough of the country, if like 50% of the U.S. or whatnot is still in lockdown when Wonder Woman is supposed to hit,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, there's not, we're not up to capacity yet, would you release Wonder Woman on video on demand? When does HBO Max hit?
Yes, fuck yes, I would. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
I knew the answer would be yes.
Yeah, I guess so.
I want to see the experiment. Fuck it. Go for it.
Honestly. No, yeah. Maybe not. How much does Wonder Woman... Yeah, I might decide to test Wonder Woman on VOD completely, because I'll be like, yeah, it's going to hurt, maybe, but it's worth trying out because we know people love it. We know that it has a downhill battle because people are already predisposed to like it. It's kind of one of the best experiments that you can run. Like, it's not as popular as the Avengers, but it's more popular than, you know, I don't know, probably Black Widow, just because there was a previous film. I think it's a really good middling blockbuster. By middling, I mean, yeah, very successful, you know, probably would make a billion, but like, I don't know, more. Like, it's up there, but not like, you know, Avatar or anything. I think that'd be a good one to experiment with. But I'm not running a studio, so.
Yeah, very true. All righty then. Well, that's it. That's
all
it.
All she wrote.
I'm done.
All she wrote. Also, because I'm not running a studio, I don't have to worry about filmmakers getting butthurt over it. Like, you know, Tarantino or whatever being upset. Like, oh, this is their new vision. I don't want to go to them. And then losing maybe prestige filmmakers. I think Warner Brothers is all about sort of the director focus, the director first approach compared to a lot of other studios. And that probably wouldn't hurt their image with that. Maybe the other filmmakers will decide to go to someone else instead. Who knows?
Who knows? Thank you guys so much for listening to LR Mornings. We're here every Monday through Friday on the LRM Online Podcast Network, along with other great shows like Breaking Geek Radio, the podcast, Geek Scholars Movie News, What to Watch This Weekend. We have a YouTube channel, the LRM Online YouTube channel, which has great content, including usually live episodes of Los Fanboys on Fridays around 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern. And, of course, the grand mothership herself, LRMonline.com, for all your entertainment news needs and opinions. Jammer, where can people find you at online?
You can find me on Twitter at JamTheWriter and all my stuff at LRMonline.com, and of course my novels under the name AJ Serna on Amazon.
All right, you guys can find me at That Kyle Malone on Twitter. Thank you so much for listening. We will talk to you tomorrow.
Hey, did you hear that aliens exist?